Insurance Group, providing residents throughout New York State with total insurance coverage.
This program is a production of WAMC News. From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly half-hour review of New York State government and politics. Your host is political scientist and syndicated columnist Dr. Alan Chartock of the State University.
Hello and welcome to the Legislative Gazette. This week, the new public relations offensive of Governor Cuomo for ethics legislation. Assembly Speaker Mel Miller talks about pay raises for legislators, which he strongly supports. We'll hear from the commander of the New York Army National Guard about their state of readiness in the aftermath from former Commander Vito Castellano. Also, the withdrawal of Alexander Levine from the nomination to Thruway Authority chairman, and newly proposed changes in the state Medicaid system. All this plus more. Can you imagine? Coming up on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Cuomo said this week that it's now or never for an ethics bill, that the time has come for a final decision. At the same time, Senate Republican leader Warren Anderson reportedly said that unless a bill was printed by this week, it probably should not be considered for a full House vote this session. Amid these edicts, Cuomo had a press conference to talk about the major issues. Joining us on the Legislative Gazette is Maury Small, who was at that press conference. Maury, what went on at this conference?
Governor Cuomo called the press conference ostensibly to talk about an internal audit bill, which would require state agencies and authorities to perform internal audits and then make public the results. It's an ethics and government measure. But basically, the press conference was politicking. Cuomo wanted to put some pressure on the Republican-led Senate to move on a couple of key bills, important bills that have been bogged down in negotiations. Cuomo wants them passed. He wanted to put the pressure on the Republicans. They are, of course, the ethics bill, which has been dragged through negotiations. It isn't clear if it's going to come out. As you just said, Anderson has said maybe we should postpone it till the next session, but Cuomo wants it. The other bill, a court merger bill, a court reform bill, it's been virtually pronounced dead. The governor, however, called on the Senate to at least take these bills, put them on the floor for debate and possibly a vote. He said the public should be able to see where their representatives stand on these issues. But the ethics issue is a very hot one this week for the governor himself. A close associate of Cuomo, Alexander Levine, the director of the Thruway Authority of New York, has been focused on, there have been charges of conflict of interest. Someone sent an anonymous letter to Governor Cuomo saying that a computer software firm that Levine has contacts with worked with a consulting firm. That consulting firm had worked with the Thruway Authority. The implication here being that Levine could have told the consulting firm, you do this work for us, I'll get you contracts with the Thruway Authority. Now, that charge has not been proven at all, but it is being investigated by the state. So at the Thursday morning press conference, Cuomo was questioned intensively by reporters about the issue, especially because Levine is a close associate of his. He downplayed the whole issue. He said there are no charges against Levine. There's only this letter. And he said that sometimes very sick people write letters like this just to get back at someone. And he called then on the person who wrote the letter to come forward and participate in the investigation into Levine. He said this would be the fair thing to do, and he offered his own personal protection for that person. In other words, the person would not lose their job or whatever because of blowing the whistle on Levine.
And of course, there are a lot of implications to this, Maury. Alexander Levine is one of Governor Cuomo's closest associates, and this is a tough one on the governor because, you know, he has always allowed himself to cut people loose who misbehaved. Now, assuming this is a case of misbehavior, this may be one of those times when a governor feels reticent and starts to protect somebody else. And when that kind of thing begins to happen, that's when they get into trouble, whether they're Richard Nixon or anybody else. So Cuomo has to be very careful on this one, and we're going to have to watch and see what he does here. On the ethics question, I'm amazed because, you know, there are a lot of people who have been saying to me that Cuomo, particularly Republicans, that Cuomo really doesn't want the ethics issue resolved. They've been saying he really wants the issue, but I don't believe that. I think he wants this bill, and I'm being told by a lot of Republican senators that it looks like he's going to get it. And he's already opened up what we call a second front on this question of internal audits in the legislature and what he calls his guidelines bill, which is really just a sort of reconfigured ethics, piece of ethics legislation, which will allow us to know where and how the legislature spends its money. And I have a feeling we're in for the same kind of fight on that one, in which the legislature resists, the governor beats them up, the newspapers take the governor's side, and like that. Anyway, thanks, Maury. That's the Legislative Gazette's Maury Small. Meanwhile, the question still hangs in the air in Albany. Will they or won't they? Will lawmakers vote themselves a pay raise this session or not? We put the question to Assembly Speaker Mel Miller in this week's Speaker's Corner.
I think the legislature is not going to consider a pay raise unless and until such time as there's an agreement on the ethics bill. At that time, maybe there'll be a sit-down. Right now, as of it's 5 after 11 on the 23rd of June, we have not, the legislative leaders have not sat down to discuss it. I think the feeling was that while I think individually we all feel there should be, we are now paid substantially less than the New York City Council is, that we would not really want to broach that subject unless we had an ethics bill put together.
The governor says that the leaders have specifically said there have been no discussions.
I just said that. That's exactly what I just said to you.
But the majority leader, Mr. Talon, said on our air, on WRGB, excuse me, on Channel 6 last weekend, that there have been extensive discussions.
Well, I since the majority leader hasn't been at the discussions and I've been at all the leaders' meetings, I think there have been a lot of discussions among our members about pay raises, but on a leadership level, I think the feeling was that until we get an ethics bill, it would not be a profitable discussion, and let's get the ethics bill first. I think if we get an ethics bill, then at that point there may be discussions, but at this point, at least not yet. Maybe they'll be today or tomorrow or the next day, but right now there haven't been discussions. The whole emphasis is trying to get an eye. It's the wrong word. I know also that town leader, it is not an ethics bill. He's right. It's a conflict of interest bill and a disclosure bill. Ethics bill would be a whole different type of thing, but until the disclosure bill is dealt with and the conflicts bill is dealt with, there have been no discussions. I think if those bills are dealt with, then I think the legislative leaders may be willing to sit down and discuss with the governor legislative pay raises, by the way, which could not go into effect until 1989. Unlike the city council, we cannot raise our salaries anyhow during our elected term. So if we don't do it before 89, we have to wait till 91. The legislature hasn't had a raise till 85. So I have made it very clear to the press that while I strongly favor pay raises, that subject won't be broached until I know we have a bill dealing with disclosure and conflict.
Assembly Speaker Mel Miller. Meanwhile, Speaker Miller was among several Democratic Assembly leaders who this week unveiled a proposal to make more New Yorkers eligible for Medicaid. Maury Small has our report.
Assembly Speaker Mel Miller and Democratic Majority Leader James Talon announced support for a bill to broadly expand Medicaid eligibility in New York. The measure would make Medicaid coverage available to about 60,000 New Yorkers who currently have no health insurance. An estimated 80% of those people are working adults and their children. Talon, who until recently chaired the Assembly Health Committee, says government has to take more responsibility for health care, which he says is being denied to too many people, largely because of recent economic trends.
What's happened in the last 5 years is that there has been a very significant deterioration in the level of health insurance coverage among the American people. And a lot of it grows out of the 82 recession and the kind of jobs that were created after the 82 recession. You know the agenda, the movement to service jobs from manufacturing to part-time from full-time, to less unionized from more likely to be organized. All those trends are in effect changing the whole structure of the workforce on which our health insurance system is based. We're now with an estimate that we have 2.4 million New Yorkers without any level of health insurance coverage in the state. Now, what we start to do today is to start to resolve that problem. And we start with government's basic responsibility, governmental responsibility for those people who are poor, governmental responsibility for those people who are at the bottom.
Eligibility for Medicaid in New York depends on the size of the household and the amount of total income. Currently in New York, a three-person household is eligible for Medicaid if its income is 80% of the federal poverty level or less. But for a larger household, the income has to be much lower to qualify the members for Medicaid. For example, if a five-person household brings in more than $7,700 a year, the members cannot get Medicaid coverage. Talon says Medicaid coverage for smaller households has been protected because many one- and two-person households are made up of older people. As their Social Security payments have risen in recent years, the state raised the eligibility level for Medicaid to ensure that the elderly don't lose medical coverage. Talon says current Medicaid standards are also punishing the poor two-parent family by making it ineligible for Medicaid when a single-parent family with the same income would be eligible.
If you had two adults in a household with a child, the intact family, those adults were ineligible for coverage under the Medicaid program, and we correct that in this bill. I can only observe how inappropriate it is that our program of medical insurance for the poor was withheld from the intact family while being available to the family in which the second adult has departed.
Expanding the Medicaid rolls under the proposed legislation would add $86 million to the annual $7 billion Medicaid program in New York State. Costs are shared by the local, state, and federal governments. Asked about expected local opposition to increased Medicaid spending, Talon noted that towns and cities are already bearing medical costs of many poor people who turn up as charity cases at local hospitals, while if they had Medicaid coverage, the state and federal governments would be helping to foot the bill. Assembly Speaker Mel Miller said the proposed legislation would actually save government money because many people are currently staying on unemployment because if they got a job, they'd be earning too much to qualify for Medicaid.
This is the most cost-effective of all programs. And it's cost-effective because the cost of treating these people, the cost of keeping these people as dependents of the state, is a lot more expensive than opening up and making available to them medical care, medical treatment, because as we've learned for so many years, you know, a dollar spent on prevention ultimately is going to be worth $10 spent when we have to pick them up down the line.
Miller and Talon say the Assembly could well pass the bill by the end of the current session, expected next week. But an aide to Senator John Markey, who's sponsoring the bill in the Senate, says it's highly unlikely the Senate will pass it that fast. For the Legislative Gazette, this is Maury Small.
The New York Army National Guard is a unit of state government that has connections to both state and federal authorities. The Guard has been called by Governor Cuomo in emergency situations like Hurricane Gloria. And in 1970, some New York Guardsmen were mobilized by President Nixon during the postal work stoppage. The State Guard troops are headed by Major General Lawrence Flynn, who moved into the post last April. 90% of the Guard members are part-time, training one weekend a month and 2 weeks a year. The Legislative Gazette's Leslie Brokaw spoke with Major General Flynn to ask him about several issues, including how he determines the readiness of his troops. He says the Army has established a set of testing and evaluation procedures.
They're called, as a matter of fact, RTEP, which is the Army Training and Evaluation Program. And each unit down to the company level undergoes one of these RTEPs or evaluation programs every other year. And there are, you know, regular scales by which they're graded. And they cover the broad range of activities that the particular type unit has to accomplish. If it's a maintenance unit, it's got one set of standards. If it's an artillery unit, it has another. If it's an infantry, it has another. So they're actually graded under the same standards that the active component is graded, because everyone has to evaluate what additional training you require, your organization requires, in order to meet its commitment.
There's currently a lawsuit right now that's been filed primarily by Minnesota, but in concurrence with several other states that have joined in opposition to a federal law that prohibits state governors from vetoing assignments that their National Guard members might face.
Yeah.
What do you think of that? Do you think guards should be able to train anywhere?
Well, that's a political decision that I'm really not in a position to answer. A great level of our country's readiness is now in the National Guard, and as such, the federal government is very, very concerned that the National Guard be as well trained and as ready to respond as it can be. So the federal government has been spending more and more money on the Guard. We've increased the full-time support that the Guard has from a level of about 4% of the force 7 or 8 years ago were full-time people. We're up to about 10% now. Now, the Constitution vests in the Congress the responsibility or the authority to raise the militia. They reserve to the states, to the governors, the authority to appoint the officers and require that the states train the militia according to the discipline established by the Congress. Now, what we have now, this suit that was brought by Governor Perpich, is on that very issue. The Congress initially established in 1952 the ability of the governors to withhold their consent for overseas training. The Congress in 1986 amended that to say that the governors could still deny the withhold their consent, but they could not withhold their consent if the only reason they had was the place where the training was going to be.
Let me ask you, though, as head of the New York National Guard, does it make your job easier to know that you can take your guard anywhere to train?
Well, the law now states that I can, and we're a lawful people in a lawful state. The governor has delegated to me the authority to approve overseas deployments for the National Guard, but I have reserved and have told him that I will exercise that authority until we are presented with with what I would consider a sensitive issue, and at that time I would go to him for his approval or guidance.
Hmm. You're following Major General Vito Castellano as the head of New York's National Guard.
That's correct.
And he left amid some controversy over a number of issues, including his pension and plans to boost it, and some criticism that he was out of the country when Hurricane Gloria hit New York, and most recently his association with the WEDTEC defense contractor.
Yeah, that had nothing to do with his leaving.
Yeah. How have the issues, though, affected the National Guard, both you and the people who work in the Guard?
Well, at the time that I was under consideration, as were a number of other people, for the position as the Chief of Staff and the Commanding General, I advised the Governor that the problems that the organization had in public perception would go away when the successor Chief of Staff took hold and moved out smartly and aggressively and, took up the position of a leader, because people will invariably follow a strong leader who displays the characteristics of integrity, courage, and competence. And I don't want that to sound self-serving, but I'm simply saying that if you have perception problems because of a weak leader or one that is perceived to be weak, if you follow on with a strong leader, one who moves in the directions that his soldiers feel they should be moving, those problems of perception go away. And I think our National Guard is stronger today than it was a year ago.
Has the issue become a source of distraction or disappointment for rank and file members?
No. At the time, the specter of, two of its general officers being indicted for, things less than, things unprofessional and possibly illegal, certainly didn't do anything for their perception of leadership as a whole. But I and all of the other, the other leaders within the organization have been talking to the soldiers and saying to them the very things that I've been saying to you for the last 20 minutes about the vital role that they play and the importance that they hold in the defense posture of the country. And we simply don't have time to concern ourselves with things in the past, particularly since they were things that had nothing to do with the soldiers and nothing to do with the soldier's competence or his performance. As far as we're concerned, they were cosmetic problems. They're real to the people who were affected, but to the rest of the organization, simply ones of perception.
Major General Lawrence Flynn is commander of the New York State Army National Guard. He spoke with the Legislative Gazette's Leslie Brokaw, who spent a day observing staged military exercises at Fort Drum, New York, near Watertown. Stan Lundeen, you've been in on the negotiations over some of the last-minute bills that have come up between the Republican-dominated Senate, the Democratic Assembly, and the Democratic governor, who you work with. There is one that I want to talk to you about today, and that involves prisons. What is the governor looking for, and what seems to be the point of negotiation?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to understand the context that we're approaching this problem from. Almost every other big state in the nation is under a statewide federal court order where the federal courts are in effect running the state prisons because they're so overcrowded. California is, Texas is. And the result of that in Texas, for example, is that every time you jail someone, you have to let somebody out. Mm-hmm. It's just that simple. We cannot administer a tough, effective criminal justice program in New York if we get into that situation. Therefore, we have to deal with the overcrowding and capacity problems that we have in the state, and they're shared by the state and the counties. We think that'll take additional prison cells, and it will take reforms in our corrective and correctional practices. We believe that we're very close to having agreement on additional cells. It sounds funny at the first, but we can use this barge that was a British troop ship for $10 million and provide the same number of cells as would cost $50 million to build with new construction. Plus, it's available in a relatively short period of time. Plus, we think we can locate it downstate where most of the prisoners come from, so that's an attractive option. The Rome Developmental Center is there. There clearly is the capacity to have the employees and the necessary correction officers and other employees in Rome, and we believe we can locate immediately 1,000 beds and eventually 2,000 beds at the site of the Rome Developmental Center. We've committed to building a new 700 bed prison unit in Marcy, and in addition to that, we need reform in our corrective practices to the extent of allowing those nonviolent criminals who are first-time offenders to have a little optional treatment instead of just sticking them in a cell. We're going to have a program. I think it has an unfortunate name of shock incarceration, but I believe it is both tough and also good for the first-time offender. And we have another program called Earned Eligibility, the effect of which will be to allow those prisoners who have earned reasonable treatment to get parole at an earlier date.
What is the point of negotiation, though? Is everybody on board, or is anybody...
Well, there is a little question in the Senate mind about some of the wording of the earned eligibility piece, and there's some question as of late yesterday that the Assembly had about constructing an additional prison at Marcy, and then a third question about where we're going to locate the barge. But I think those things are all eminently resolvable. I believe that our Director of Criminal Justice, Larry Kurlander, has done an outstanding job in negotiating between very, very different elements. You know, you have Senator Chris Mega, who is tough and a law and order kind of a guy, and you have Assemblyman Arthur Eve and other people that think we've built too many prison cells in the state and feel that we ought to take an alternative approach. And we believe that what we have now on the table is balanced, it is responsible, and it will keep New York in charge of our own law enforcement and correctional system rather than inviting the federal courts to take it over.
Stan Lundeen is Lieutenant Governor. And that's it for yet another edition of the Legislative Gazette. We had help putting the show together from Dan Analek and Maury Small. Our editor and producer is Leslie Brokaw. If you have any comments, write to us at Post Office Box 13,000, I say 1,000, Albany, New York, 12212. We'll be back again next week. For now, I'm Alan Chartock.
The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC News. Dr. Alan Chartock is executive producer. This program is made possible with funds provided by the State University College at New Paltz.